Welcome to the Eldritch Estate, an establishment dedicated to the bizarre, the dark, and all that is otherworldly. We invite our guests to come and stay a while, to enjoy the haunted hallways, the shrieks of terror and delight, to forget time in our enchantingly disturbing abode. Whether it's for an overnighter or a week-long stay, our hostesses will see to it that you are shocked, horrified, and left morbidly curious about the goings-on here at the estate. Will you take a trip with us? We can't wait for you to see what's in store.
Hello, and welcome back to the Eldritch Estate. I'm Dusty.
And I'm Katie.
And oh my god, we're fucking recording again.
Welcome home. So glad you checked in.
Oh my god.
I'm sorry, guys.
It's been a moment, y'all.
Like a half a month.
Yeah, sorry. At least. Sorry. So, like, yeah. Katie had to go to the hospital unexpectedly. She's fine now. It's okay. We're all good.
My blood pressure is just real weird.
Baby Eldritch is fine, too. And then I had this, like, thing. And I had to miss Katie's baby shower, you guys. I cried.
Guys, Dusty literally planned my baby shower, though.
And then couldn't be there. I felt so bad. But I
should have stressed baby, but it worked out great. It was fine.
I had a fever and this, like, lymph node in my throat swelled up to, like, the size of, I don't know, a really large grape or something.
I could see it on FaceTime.
It was gross and very painful. So we could not record because talking was, like, ouch.
Word.
And then last week, Katie's daughter got sick, too. So then Katie was sort of getting it again. And we were like, nope, can't do it this week either. We also are very busy people, so we can only get together once a week to record. So, like, if it doesn't happen on that day, it ain't happening.
Yep.
But maybe, soon, sometime in the future, we can have more days to record, and we can make more episodes for you.
Yeah.
Wouldn't that be awesome? But today, we're here to talk about something else.
Many things.
This is absolutely going to be a two-parter, so strap in, motherfuckers.
Which really means it's a dusty episode. It's probably a three-parter, let's be honest.
I struggle with brevity, but, like, I can't not tell you guys the whole story, you know? So far this season, we've had a conspiracy theory, a true crime double feature, a haunted object, aliens, and some dark-as-fuck medical history. Which can only mean one thing. It's time for a cult episode, y'all.
Let's get culty with it.
Today, we're going to be talking about the Japanese death cult called Aum Shinrikyo. This is a big one, and I mean a big one.
And I don't know nothing about it. I did not Google it. Aren't you proud of me?
I'm proud of you, but also... Ooh. Ooh.
Ooh. Sweetie, honey, baby, child, I'm scared.
Yeah. I got a lot of my information from the last podcast on the left's coverage of this cult, and if you haven't heard their series on it, I highly recommend it. Of course, they are awesome. There's a ton more information on this cult that they dig into, because they're amazing, and they have research assistants, and they don't sleep, and, like, yeah. I have two other jobs, and I need to sleep, so I'm not going to go quite as heavily in-depth as they did. But, you know, I'm still going to give y'all all the sauce.
You give yourself not enough credit. Two jobs, my asshole.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm very busy. It's also, like, the last month of the school year, and I am stressed, y'all, so... If you know a teacher, just give them a hug. And I think when this releases, it will be Teacher Appreciation Week, so yes.
Hug a teacher. Hug a cryptid.
Yeah, exactly.
Buy them a BevMo gift card. Do what you gotta do.
Okay, let's get into it.
My daughter's school sent out this big list of, like, my teacher's favorites, and it is so cute. Like, I'm real stoked to buy her teacher gifts, because I found out she's also a gluten-free.
Yay!
And I'm like, oh my gosh, I'm gonna buy you so much cool shit.
I love that. I always get a ton of Sour Patch Kids because they're one of the only candies that are vegan. And so, like, people always want to buy you chocolate as a teacher. But if they read my little, you know, my favorite things, they see that it's Sour Patch Kids. And so, like, one year I got, like, four boxes of Sour Patch Kids. And I was like, thanks, this is great.
Okay, except not all of them are gluten-free, and it makes me really sad. Like, the actual kids, you... This sounds fucking terrible. I can't eat the kids, children. And I'm so sad about it. Okay, but the watermelon ones are gluten-free, and the kids are not.
Dude, I love the watermelon ones.
They're so fucking good.
So good. Okay. So before we can talk about the cult itself, we need to talk about its founder. As with all the other cults we've covered so far, we know that the cult leader is what really makes the cult, well, culty.
It's true.
It's often these sort of, like, charismatic, devoted, and motivated leaders who convince dozens or even hundreds of people to follow them, and they inevitably carry out whatever goal or action they've set in their minds. It's, like, really wild when you think about it.
Fucking excellent salespeople.
Yeah.
Like, I've worked with some people where I'm like, shit, if you was selling religion, I'd buy it.
Yeah.
See, and that's why I'm like, couldn't you have just fucking sold used cars or something? Like, you could have made so much money.
Right?
They didn't have to be used cars. You could have sold new ones.
Literally. So we're going to be talking about the leader of Aum Shinrikyo, and he may not seem as charismatic or likable, but he really was. He ended up getting a lot of people to follow him, and he did, in fact, lead hundreds and thousands of people in what he considered a noble quest. So let's talk about it.
Sounds like the beginning of a like, kind of kitschy video game.
Yeah, right?
Prepare for your noble quest.
So, Shoko Asahara was born as Chitsuo Matsumoto on March 2nd, 1955.
Why they always gotta change their name?
Because Chitsuo Matsumoto doesn't sound cool enough. Shoko Asahara sounds way cooler, I guess.
I don't know, I liked his birth name.
I feel like part of it too is like getting away from that identity, like you aren't happy with who you were when you were younger, and so in an effort to shed not only your past life and persona and everything, but to start your new life, you're like, I need a new name now, maybe.
Yeah. Rebranding.
But also, like, if you've watched or listened to any true crime, you know that if some motherfucker got three names, they definitely a moidora.
Yep. Yep.
Definitely.
Okay. Tell me why my kid's got a first name and two middle names. But technically it's four names, so
exactly.
I think we're safe.
Well, and the other thing is that, like, you don't necessarily have to go by all of them. Like, correct. If somebody introduces themselves and they're like, I'm John Edward Robinson, I'm gonna be like,
John Wayne Gacy.
I'm calling the police. Like,
you have kids in your crawl space.
Exactly.
Dude, have you watched the John Wayne Gacy case?
No, I haven't.
You
and
need
I really
everybody
want
go
to.
Watch them right now.
The John Wayne Gacy. Okay, I got a little too excited. The John Wayne Gacy tapes.
It's
on Netflix.
Fucking crazy.
Yeah. I have been really wanting to, but I haven't, like, had the house to myself, and other people in the house don't necessarily want to watch that.
See, with my blood pressure going crazy, I've been home, and my mom's a true crime nut.
Yeah, man.
And my husband's working.
Hell yeah.
And he is not a true crime nut, and I will traumatize him if I watch all this shit in front of him. Love you, babe. But my mom will watch fucked up shit with me.
Exactly. Find somebody you can watch fucked up shit with.
Yep. Hashtag soulmate.
Yeah, my boyfriend's mom is also getting into true crime. Shout outs to my basically sister-in-law for getting her on to Bailey Syrian, because now she and I can watch true crime together. And it's great.
It's wonderful.
So, Chitsuo Matsumoto was born into a large, poor family of tatami mat makers in Kumamoto Prefecture. According to other podcasts that I listened to, they lived in a small hut with a dirt floor and survived mostly on sweet potatoes. And in case you were not aware, tatami mats are those mats made of woven grass or straw, typically used in Japanese houses as rugs or flooring.
They will not grow tumbleweeds in their dirt house.
Exactly.
Their dirt floor house.
Yes. He was also born with infantile glaucoma, which meant that he lost all sight in his left eye and was partially blind in his right eye at a young age.
That sucks.
He was really bullied a lot in school until he was transferred and enrolled into a school for the blind. Then the tables turned. So Asahara was known to be a bully at his new school, taking advantage of the other students by beating them and extorting money from them.
When the victim becomes the abuser.
Uh-huh.
That makes me sad.
He basically became an expert con artist as a young child.
If you can't beat them, join them.
He knew how to use his disability to, like, get the money out of people, but it wasn't just that. Because he had partial sight, he could also trick his fellow students. So, one story that I heard, he led one of his blind classmates to a barber shop to get a haircut, and he was like, yeah, I'll help you get there, because you're, you know, fully blind, and I can sort of see. So, I have partial sight, so I'll lead you there, like, I'll help you get there. And then he waited outside while the kid got a haircut, and then when the kid came out after his haircut, Asahara demanded payment from him in order to lead him back home. He was like, so how are you going to find your way home, Pay up.
Poor baby.
Right? Like, can you imagine? You're like, okay, I went and got my haircut, which, like, is kind of scary enough on its own to be like, let's walk over here and get a haircut as a kid, and then, like, now let's walk back.
And as a kid who has no sight, and, like, as a hairdresser, you don't know what your haircut looks like. That's scary in and of itself.
Kind of have to just feel and be like, I think it looks good. I think it's straight.
It feels blendy enough.
Yeah, right. Feels good when I run my fingers through it.
Okay, but that would be kind of a dope way to live life. Like, it just feels nice.
Yes.
And I feel good about it and not like I really have to super give a damn about what it looks like.
I think that's an excellent way to live your life.
Like, your face feels pretty. Oh, sorry, I just punched my microphone. Or, you know, like, it just feels good to be around you and I don't have to fucking care what you look like or whatever. That's cool.
Uh-huh. I like that.
It sounds liberating.
And then, so he eventually graduates in 1977 and he turned to the study of acupuncture and traditional Chinese medicine, which were actually common careers for the blind in Japan. You know,
I mean, all your other senses are heightened, so it would make sense that you're more perceptive to other people's
dilemmas. Like, when I go to get acupuncture, she knows, like, where exactly, but she also, like, feels around a little bit before she puts the needle in. Like, oh, is this the right spot? Yes, this is the right spot. So, like, she's relying heavily on touch, even as a sighted person. So, yeah, absolutely.
It's heavy energy work, I feel like.
Yes. The very next year, he married his wife, Tomoko Matsumoto, a young woman from a very wealthy family, and eventually fathered 6 children, the eldest of whom was born in 1978. That's a lot of kids, and we really only hear about one after the fact, so I don't have a whole lot of information about the children after this. But there's other stuff. Whoa. Like, we'll get there. We're just barely starting, y'all. He used his wife's family money to open up a pharmacy and began practicing acupuncture and other medicine. In 1981, Asahara was convicted of practicing pharmacy without a license and selling unregulated drugs, for which he was fined 200,000 yen, equivalent to about 260,000 in 2019 and equivalent to about $2,000. He was fined for that. So, I forget if I put it down here or if I put it somewhere else, but he was quote-unquote making medicines and, like, formulas and selling them to people, and they were complete bullshit. And he would sell them for just, like, asinine prices. Like,
3 drops of tap water, half an aspirin.
He would literally put, like, some orange peel and some, like, essential oils or whatever in a little bottle and sell it for, like, $80 or something. And he'd be like, you know,
sprinkle. Sounds like an MLM.
It does. Sprinkle this on your pillow 3 times a day, and you'll be cured of all ails.
And also, you're really going to want that upline discount, so exactly. You should sign up underneath me.
Sign up underneath me, become part of my downline. Yeah. And then his interest in religion reportedly started around this time, too. Having been recently married, he worked to support his large and growing family. He dedicated his free time to the study of various religious concepts, starting with Chinese astrology and Taoism. And then later, he practiced Western esotericism, yoga, meditation, esoteric Buddhism, and esoteric Christianity. He was just getting into all of it.
I follow this person on Instagram who just realized that they have been basically pulled into a yoga cult.
You know, that's like an irrational fear of mine.
You know, I would tell you if you got into some dumb shit that sounded like a cult, right?
Like I'm just going to go to yoga one time and then all of a sudden I'm going to be in a fucking cult.
Goes to yoga once.
Yeah, exactly. So that's why it's an irrational fear, but yeah. I've never been to, like, a public yoga class because some part of me is like, I'm gonna get sucked in, man.
Okay, but if we get sucked into a yoga cult, can it be a goat yoga cult with the cute little tiny goats?
Yeah,
Where they just get to trample people and they're very happy about it.
For Mother's Day, I saw puppy yoga. Dude, take your mom to puppy yoga.
I need it.
Puppy yoga. Also, I think this episode's gonna come out a few days before Mother's Day. Call your mother.
Call your mom.
Give her a hug. Buy her flowers.
Buy her flowers that she can plant.
Do the dishes. Do something. Be nice to your mom.
You exited her body.
Violently.
I mean, some people have adopted other means of motherism, sure.
Yeah.
But still. Latzia violently exited her body.
And even if you didn't, she done took care of you.
Sometimes epidurals don't work.
Ooh.
Some people are fucking brave as shit and don't get one. So hug your mom.
Hug your mom.
Hug your mom.
This has been a PSA.
Also, can you tell I'm a little scared?
Yeah.
Some people's moms got cut, like the lady in the box.
Katie's birth is rapidly approaching and she's getting a little nervous.
Baby Eldritch has a very large head.
All them big brains.
Okay, but I don't got them big, big birth and hips, so... I'm over here trying to look like Ice-T's wife, but I'm not there yet.
Okay, so then he basically founds this movement in his one-bedroom apartment in Tokyo's Shibuya Ward in 1987, which started off as a yoga and meditation class.
That's what I'm screaming.
Known as Omu Shinsen no Kai, or the Alm Immortal Mountain Wizard Association.
Fuck, I would join. Shit, I'd be getting on that bus. God damn it. I need to be a wizard.
I need to be a mountain wizard. Immortal mountain wizard.
Okay, but tell me why that's some shit that I feel like...
I feel like when you're like 16 and you're like, let's start a band, man. And you like want to be like Led Zeppelin, but you're like not like Led Zeppelin. And you play too much D&D and you're like, let's call our band the Immortal Mountain Wizards.
Tell me why that's some shit that Chris would have said to me and been like, literally did say to me. Chris is my brother figure, y'all. And this motherfucker was like, climb into this room, which was really like the back of the house where the water heater was.
Hell yeah.
It was like fucking spider webs and shit. And he's like, all right, climb into that room. And then I'm gonna shut the door.
Nope.
Which, like, I don't trust you to not leave me in there to die. And then when you come back out, I'm gonna hit you with this stick.
Nope.
And then you're gonna be a wizard.
And as a kid, you're like, do I believe you? Do I go along with this? Are you gonna beat my ass anyway?
Motherfucker, I wanna be a wizard, though.
I do wanna be a wizard. Or, like, how many of us that grew up with the Harry Potter series were like, so I'm 11. Maybe my letter from Hogwarts just hasn't come yet.
I live in Arizona, so maybe the owl died of heat stroke.
It's a long flight, man.
You're a lizard, Harry.
You're a lizard, Harry. Okay, so before Asahara started his own group, he was actually a member of a different religious organization. First off, we have to remember what time it is in Japan. And before we can talk about that, we need to talk about something called the Shinto Directive. Okay.
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 Your face looks like this is gonna fuck me up.
I don't want to go too in-depth with this, but I do feel like it's important to explain a little bit about it. And like I said, the last podcast on the left did an excellent job with this, so go listen to that. But yeah. So, prior to World War II, in fact, going as far back as 1806, and honestly, probably even further, Shintoism had been the dominating, or could you say, the only religion in Japan. It relied heavily on the principles of nationalism, unity, and loyalty. State Shinto was adopted shortly after the Meiji era in Japan and seated one person as the leader or emperor of Japan. During this time, the emperor was believed to be a deity. Similar to a king or a pope, they had a divine connection or were a god themselves and their leadership was unquestionable.
Shinto. Sounds like some Warren Jeff shit.
just get ready.
Okay.
Shinto also placed a lot of emphasis on the worship of familial ancestors and the practice of ancient traditions. Makes sense.
Okay.
Now, the reason this is all important is that state Shinto was, as I said, the national religion until 1945. meaning...
It's a long fucking time.
Everybody did it. It is the one. The only. Do not do anything else. Do not pass go. Do not collect $200. Only Shinto.
Okay.
You cannot be Christian. You cannot be Buddhist. You cannot be Jewish. Only Shinto. Everybody in Japan. Religion is state Shinto. That's it. Okay? So, like, nobody even knows anything else, really, at this point.
Okay.
Then World War II happens.
Yeah.
In case you haven't stayed up to date with your world history, this was primarily a war fought between the Allied countries, like the UK, the Soviet Union, and the United States. China helped, too. And the Axis countries, Germany, Italy, and Japan, hopped in there, too. Now, we aren't going to go into the causes of World War II or all the battles because, like, we have to eventually get back to the death cult part of this podcast, but... After World War II, the United States and many others felt that Shinto, in the form that it took leading up to and during the war, was social propaganda and was used as a tool of ultra-nationalism and a disguise for militarism. So they basically felt that this sought to, like, radicalize Japan and...
Trying to weaponize people.
Yeah. However, even though this support of Shinto was defined as non-religious propaganda by the folks in the government, in the Allied schools it was being taught as religious in nature. So it was U.S. policy regarding post-surrender Japan to abolish state Shinto, which was not and never had been a formal imperial policy. So the U.S. comes in and is literally, like, made to be in charge of this. Like, World War II ends, and the U.S. is like... We're gonna establish a new religion for y'all because we don't agree with this whole state Shinto thing. I really don't know why the US was placed in charge of this.
Why are we sticking our dick in their tea? Why?
Like, I could understand being like, so state Shinto, maybe not the way to go moving forward after World War II, you guys. But why was it the United States? I just don't... Okay. Like,
this is your job now.
Yeah. Can you imagine literally any other country coming to the United States and being like, guess what, you are all going to do this religion now, or you are all not going to do this religion now. Like, it would never fucking happen.
I mean, some people think that's what teachers are doing.
Yeah, we had a conversation about that earlier, too. I'm just gonna sum it up by, if you have questions about what your child is learning in their classroom, email the teacher and ask them.
Yep.
That's all I'm gonna say on that.
Yep. Communicate. It's a beautiful thing.
It is. So, they were basically aiming to replace state Shinto with something else. Ideally, they were probably thinking that this would be better in regards to, like, religious freedom and the separation of church and state. Like, they thought they were kind of doing a good deed here. The only problem with this is that Shinto was all people had ever known for over a century. Like, generations of families and people, and they were like... This is what the fuck we do. Now we have an emperor, a supreme being, announcing on the radio that he is, in fact, not a god. He had to go on the public radio and be like, hello, I am the emperor, and I'm actually not a god.
And then what do you do with yourself from there? Like, you got the rug pulled out from underneath you.
I imagine you flee the country and, like, start a new life in Argentina or something. So, needless to say, people were shook.
Yeah.
And to have all this happen so forcibly, right after the war, and right after the bombings of Nagasaki and Hiroshima, no less, by the people responsible for said bombings, I'm just saying it was a lot to take in.
A little hairy.
Radical change, you could say. Yeah.
It's a haircut that didn't feel good.
Mm-mm, it did not feel good when you run your fingers through it. Not at all. So basically,
that's what she said. I'm sorry.
Okay, I did walk right into that one. So basically what I'm saying here is that after this happened, religion in Japan was kind of a free-for-all of sorts. Everybody was trying different religions to see if they liked it, and quite a few people were coming up with their own shit and trying to sell it. It happens. Like, Yeah, exactly. It left the country in kind of a religious lurch, where people were just searching for answers, for guidance, for faith. And this obviously led to some rather odd organizations. One might say cults being formed as well. So Asahara joins this other cult, checks it out for a while, and basically decides, I can do this way better.
You know what? There's money in this.
Yeah.
And I'm good at selling shit.
Mm-hmm. Well, and he's already an experienced con artist. And he knows that he can sort of manipulate the fact that he has a disability to his own gain. And according to things that I read and watched, he was actually pretty charismatic. Like, people called him, like, very, like... Anyway. One of my dogs just had a lot to say just now.
Brief pupper intermission.
But a lot of people described him as, like, having a very, like, pleasant, even sort of Buddha-like disposition. Like, he was just, like, a happy, smiley...
calming energy kind of person.
Yeah, kind of dude. So, on to Aum Shinrikyo. In 1984, Asahara formed Aum Shinsen no Kai. He changed his own name from Chitsuo Matsumoto to Shoko Asahara and renamed his group Aum Shinrikyo in 1987. Aum Shinrikyo, or quote-unquote Supreme Truth, was the name he moved forward with and which ultimately became the popular name of the group. Fun fact, Aum Shinrikyo is technically still operational, though obviously not in the same capacity that it was when Asahara was in charge.
Tell me why that's like all the cults that we've done so far.
Yep.
I'm like, oop, the wheel's still turning, the website's still active, there's a mailing address, all right.
There's a mailing address. Yeah, it's kind of crazy to think about. Especially ones, like, where a bunch of people died. Like, so y'all did not get on the spaceship. Y'all still running the website.
You didn't learn.
Yeah. You did not become enlightened. So Asahara applied for government registration, and against the advice of cult experts and government officials... the Tokyo Metropolitan Government granted it legal recognition as a religious corporation in 1989. A religious corporation. Not a cult. After this, a monastic order was established and many lay followers joined. Asahara gained credibility by appearing on TV and on magazine covers. He gradually attained a following of believers and began being invited to lecture meetings at universities.
Was he cute?
He had more of that, like, guru thing going on, like, with the long hair and, like, not showering a whole lot.
Mm.
But remember, this is, like, the 80s, so he kind of had, like, more of a 70s vibe, like, free love type thing. But as we see, and as we have seen, that all starts to go away. A lot of cult leaders start out very happy and pleasant and all this stuff, and then, you know, it takes a turn. So he had long hair, he was bearded, he was sort of on the chubbier side, but a pleasant countenance, like I said. And he had that smiling face that you see in a lot of religious imagery, like the sort of natural smile or the resting smile, opposite of what I have RBF.
Same. Absolute same.
He also wrote...
I just googled what he looks like, and this cover of Time magazine with this picture just says, Cult of Doom.
Hell yeah. Yeah, like, to me, he looks sort of more on the sad side. But when you see him speak, he's really... Oh, that's him levitating. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Can't you see that he's levitating in that photo?
Is he laying on his back?
No. You know what I think he did? I think he sat crisscross, and he just, like, boom! Like, tensed his muscles real quick, and they snapped the photo while he was up in the air.
Because he looks like he's straining all of the muscles in his body, and his hair is blown back.
Because he's built different. Katie.
Okay.
Yeah. We're gonna get around to that.
I'm dead. He's levitating. Alright.
He is levitating because his blood is special, okay?
I... Go on with your bad self. Whatever you gotta do to tell yourself you're doing good.
You know, whatever gets you out of bed in the morning. Asahara also wrote several religious books, including Beyond Life and Death and Supreme Initiation. The doctrine of Aum Shinrikyo is based, and I'm going to say very loosely and sort of twisted in his own way, based on the Vajrayana branch of Buddhism and the Bible and other texts. In 1992, Asahara published Declaring Myself the Christ, within which he declared himself Christ, and said that he was Japan's only fully enlightened master, and he also identified himself with the Lamb of God.
Oh.
So yeah, nothing we haven't seen before. Some dude starts a cult, declares himself Christ, on and on and on. Like, bread and butter. Right?
Megalomania, just a touch. It's yeah. Right.
But in all seriousness, this one does take an interesting turn. It's just that a lot of this is straight out of the How to Start Your Own Cult for Dummies handbook.
Teach me how to culty.
Yeah. So his purported mission was to take others' sins upon himself, and he claimed he could transfer spiritual power to his followers. He also saw dark conspiracies everywhere, which he claimed were brought about by, up to, and including the Jews, the Freemasons, the Dutch, the British royal family, and rival Japanese religions.
So all of these. Buenos.
Yeah, everyone conspiring against us. Dark conspiracies everywhere. He outlined a doomsday prophecy, which included a third world war. Again, we've seen this before.
Mm-hmm.
And he described a final conflict culminating in a nuclear Armageddon, borrowing the term from the Book of Revelation 16:16.
For being what you consider a branch of Buddhism, you're borrowing a lot of shit from the Bible.
Yeah, and that's the other thing, is it's really just this big amalgamation of all these other religions.
I feel like that's just religion in general, though.
Yeah, and I mean, there are similarities between several religions, right? Like, that's valid.
Word. I mean, even down to just cultural practices. Like,
yes.
Why the fuck we bring a tree inside for Christmas?
Right. That's
some pagan shit.
Mm-hmm. Why there be bunnies and eggs everywhere at Easter. They got nothing to do with Jesus.
It's a fertility festival?
Mm-hmm.
Ah.
But y'all don't want to talk about that.
Reproducing like bunnies and laying eggs and shit.
Mm-hmm. We should do an episode about like pagan holidays that we still celebrate aspects of. That would be a cool episode.
Good word.
Okay. Cool. Let's do it.
Oh, we should have done one for Easter.
Next year.
Yep.
We were busy having the plague, but not like the Rona plague, like some other kind of plague.
Okay, I've had both, and I think that one might have been worse.
Dude, I swear my lymph node was swollen for a month. It was awful.
That was beyond a lymph node. Like, you were growing a friend on your neck.
Yeah. And I looked it up, by the way, you know, WebMD helping me out, and apparently...
Oh, just testicular cancer?
That sort of thing can be caused by your body fighting off an infection.
Yeah.
Or exposure to allergens.
Rude.
It's springtime. I'm being exposed to allergens.
It's the pollening right now.
The pollening. Or a reaction to stress. And I was like, check, check, check.
That sounds terrible.
So I just got bitch-ass lymph nodes, I guess.
Like, my lymph nodes were a little swollen, but not, like, where I just had one that was super feisty and angry.
No, this was, like...
I just coughed like I was trying to cough my whole body out of my body.
Yeah, it's like Katie was saying, like, you could see it protruding from my neck in a rather grotesque way. So, he outlines this doomsday prophecy, and he says there's going to be a nuclear Armageddon, and he often preached the necessity of Armageddon for, quote-unquote, human relief. He eventually declared, quote, put Tantra Vajrayana into practice in accordance with the doctrines of Mahamudra, and he led a series of terrorist attacks using a secret organization hidden from ordinary believers. So I'm going to backtrack a little bit.
That escalated quickly, all right.
Yeah, I'm going to backtrack a little bit. He took the concept of karma from Buddhism and basically, like, turned it on its head. He convinced his followers that he was able to release their own bad karma and actually replace it with good karma via various activities within the cult. One of these activities was to physically beat another member of the cult, usually with wooden sticks. This was often done...
To turn them into a fucking wizard.
Yes, because you're full of bad karma, so we're gonna beat it out of you. And I don't know if you know this, Katie, but if you beat somebody to release their bad karma, you get good karma from that. Yeah.
Squeezing the karmic tube of toothpaste?
I guess. I don't fucking know. So this was often done as a punishment. If one of the followers, like, broke a rule in the organization, their punishment would be to have their bad karma released by the other members who would beat them viciously, which would in turn give them good karma for helping this poor soul to release their bad karma. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, makes total sense, right?
mm-hmm. Sure.
Sure.
Okay.
Like I said, there's a lot here. We haven't even begun.
Just the amount of, like, mental gymnastics you have to do. And just the fact that you're reprogramming people to think, like, oh, beating someone is good.
Reprogramming is the exact correct word.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's gross.
Mm-hmm. So, before continuing, I wanted to discuss the complex infrastructure that Aum Shinrikyo operated under. They literally had a corporate pyramid in place with the organization of this cult.
Okay, but tell me why. I was literally just saying, it's like an MLM.
It is like an MLM. Like, they have organized it exactly like a Japanese business corporation would be organized. Like, they've got their CEO, they've got their chairs, they've got their, like, bosses, administrators, managers, and then the drones, right?
Everybody's got an upline.
Yeah. So there were drones who operated at the lowest level, and these were mostly new recruits and people who were just carrying out orders. They didn't even know why, for what purpose, you know, how does this serve the cult? They were just like, I was told to do this thing, I'm doing this thing.
I was just told I'd get $50 if I dropped off this envelope. Little did I know it was full of anthrax or whatever.
Exactly. Now, they still believed in the doctrine of Aum Shinrikyo, but like I said, they were not privy to the inner workings of the cult, or did they know about the, like, long-range plans and the true plots that Asahara was cooking up.
Well, he was probably the only one that knew the truth.
Him and a very small select group of his highest elites. There were other various roles, such as priests, ministers, etc., moving up the ladder, and then at the very top were Asahara's main servants. These were the people who were taking orders directly from him, working in small teams, doing experiments, and carrying out heavier tasks.
Mm.
Because...
I don't like this whole doing experiments thing. That sounds bad.
Let's talk about that.
That sounds greasy.
So let's talk about the kind of people that Aum Shinrikyo attracted. A lot of times when we discuss cults, we see the members who have joined as being, like, gullible or delusional. Like, we think to ourselves, like, how could they possibly, like, bought into this? How could they possibly join this cult? Like, we as outsiders can recognize the batshitness of a leader the mile away. Like, we have a hard time understanding why a perfectly logical person would join. I've been guilty of it in the past, too. Like, how could you have a conversation with this person and hear what they say and still think, yeah, this is the group for me, you know? Like,
okay, but sometimes it just takes the rug being pulled out from underneath you to realize that you have been standing in a fucking quicksand pit.
Yes.
And not realize that you were sinking.
Yes. So to begin with, Japan has an extremely high population density. 125.8 million people live in Japan, and almost 14 million people live in Tokyo alone.
That's a lot of fucking people.
To get an idea about this, think about New York City. Tokyo is much larger than New York City, and it is also the most populated city in the world. But because it's so large, its population density is only 15,604 people per square mile, whereas NYC's is 27,578. Or to put it another way, Tokyo has about the same population as California in an area the size of LA County.
Yeah.
Like, people on top of people.
Okay, but tell me why I feel like Japan is so much cleaner.
I think that's largely just due to the culture there. Even when I went to China, which obviously China and Japan are not the same, but in China there were people just, like, hired to be outside on the streets, sweeping the sidewalks, cleaning up trash, throwing things away, like, just making sure that it looked nice outside at all times. Like, that was their job. And a lot of times they were, like, kind of people in their, like, 40s who had technically retired from the business world,
mm-hmm.
Because people also retire a lot younger out there, which I think is great.
Also, sign me the fuck up.
Right. And then they would take on these, like, really part-time jobs. Like, maybe you only work an hour or two a day, and then someone else comes in and, you know, cleans up the trash and sweeps and makes sure there's not leaves in the little gutter of the street, you know? Like, it was super clean, but I always saw somebody out there, like, picking up trash or making sure that it looked nice. Because of this, there's really no personal space in a public setting.
Mm-mm.
Combine this with the rigorous work and school schedules in a culture where, quote, overworked to death is actually a prevalent threat, and the idea of your own inner world becomes not just important, but truly precious. So we know that this inner world is vital to many Japanese people. Your own space, your own time to yourself, your hobbies, your entertainment, etc. So now you combine this with people who are already seeking an escape, who need something besides this hyper-packed reality of work, work, work. And now combine that with this religious revolution of sorts. So many people, disillusioned with the main religious offerings, were seeking an escape that more closely mirrors their inner world and ideals, and who are also intelligent, highly trained, and highly specialized in what they do. That's your prime Aum Shinrikyo candidate.
Dangerous. Still thinking about all those people packed into LA County.
Yep.
Like, you can feel someone breathing on you all the time.
All the time. And that was another thing that we sort of experienced in China. And again, I'm just comparing because I've never been to Japan. I've only been to China, but there are certain similarities, obviously.
Well, you've been to several other countries, and, like...
Right.
Most comparable experience.
There wasn't this, like, you just wait in line, and the line moves however fast it moves, and you keep your spot in line, and if you need to step out of line, you might ask the person, hey, can you save my spot real quick? Or you say, oh, no, it's okay, you can go ahead. Whereas in China, because there are so many people and because everyone's trying to get somewhere, the culture just is different. So it's like, I need to get there, and we're all going to kind of push to get there. And like, if I have to push past you to get there, I'm going to push past you to get there. And it's not that I'm being rude or disrespectful to you. It's just that I need to get there, and we're all trying to get there. And like, if you're not moving, then you're not moving, kind of thing.
Sounds like riding the subway in New York.
Yeah, and so some of the people on the trip that I was with, they were sort of, you know, put off by this. They were like, oh, like, they just pushed past me. And I'm like, right, but it's not rude here. It's just...
You weren't
moving. It just is, right? Like, they have to be somewhere, and you weren't moving because you're a tourist, and you don't know where you're going. So, like, they went around you.
And you're not in a hurry. You're not trying to get to work or whatever
right,
it is.
Right, exactly. And they might have jostled you on your way, but, like... The feeling of being constantly surrounded by other bodies is very real there.
That makes me feel so overstimulated just thinking about it. Like, being touched out as a human being,
mm-hmm.
which I did not learn about until becoming a mom. Like, I'm fortunate I didn't learn about it before then, but, like, whole different ballpark of overstimulated.
Yeah.
Where you're like, I just need to have no one breathe near me or touch me or need something from me for... 5 minutes. Like, I'm just gonna go lock myself in the bathroom for a minute.
Yeah.
Me and my homie getting, in the toilet.
Getting back to our hotel room at the end of the day was, like, exactly as I was just talking about. It's your own inner world, your own inner space. There's nobody else there. You can do whatever you want. And it's just that pressure of being in public with eyes on you or people around you being taken away for a moment. It's like a breath of fresh air, right? Now, conversely, there is also the opposite can be said as, like, affectionate touch, especially between, like, teacher and student in a totally appropriate manner. I'm just gonna, you know, say that.
Yeah.
Was also much more prevalent there. Like, you might touch a student on the top of the head, like, hey, good job, you got that one, or, like, a touch on the shoulder, or, like, you know, a hug was much more common, whereas, like, here in the United States, we're like, oh, God, don't touch the kids because somebody might think that you're sexually abusing them.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously it's important that we protect children from sexual predators. I'm not saying that.
Word.
But I'm saying I've sat through literally dozens of trainings on how to make sure that if a student wants to hug you, you do it in a way that isn't going to get you sued.
Yep. Mastering the art of the side hug.
Yes. I will say, though, that that physical touch didn't necessarily stop at only good things. I did have a teacher swat at a student, and I was like, please don't hit the students, ma'am, like my teaching assistant who was from China. And a kid was, like, on his phone watching a show or something during my class, and I said, hey, I just need you to put your phone away right now, like, we're having class. And he heard me. I'm not sure he fully understood me. His level of English was a little bit lower than some of my other students in the class.
Mm-hmm.
And then not even 5 minutes later, he's got his phone back out, and he's got his earbud in. He's watching this show. And so I just went to my TA, and I said, hey, if he's got his phone out again, can I just, like, take it for the rest of class? Can I just, like, keep it in my desk? And she goes, he's on his phone again? And she, like, stormed over to him and, like, cocked her hand back like she was, and I was like, oh, ma'am, please, please do not hit the children. But again, that's more acceptable there. Like, mm-hmm. Your kid isn't going to come home and be like, the teacher hit me. They're probably not going to mention it because they don't want you to know that they got in trouble.
Deep shit.
Exactly. So yeah, very different as far as that goes. So we were talking about these people who are basically your prime candidate for Om Shinrikyo. They're highly intelligent, highly trained, highly specialized, and they're disillusioned with the other religious offerings. They're looking for an escape, and they're looking for people more like them. So Asahara would talk to these people, or his underlings would, and he would convince them that Om Shinrikyo was the answer they'd been seeking. It was peace, happiness, and enlightenment. Remember, Asahara was touting himself as the next Buddha. And also and Christ.
Culty people start with small seeds that grow into big trees that you don't understand how they could be planted.
Yes.
But when you look all the way back to the little seeds, you're like, well, peace and happiness sound great.
Mm-hmm.
You know, all these big, simple promises.
Mm-hmm.
And then you find yourself beating someone with a stick, trying to beat the bat out of them.
Yup. Yeah, that's exactly how this goes.
Like, that shit escalates quickly.
Yeah, and like I said, I want to make it clear here that the majority of the people in Om Shinrikyo were not these, like, blind fools who would just follow anyone. They were very book smart, but maybe not necessarily street smart. They weren't inherently gullible, and they really thought that by joining, they could find the answers they sought and be of real help in the world. Many of these people were doctors, scientists, lawyers, and businessmen.
Like, or stay-at-home moms who think they could sell leggings to be successful.
Right. Well, and, like, on that note, too, it is, like, I don't want to say tempting, because that's not the word that I'm looking for, but, like, hey, you can run your own business from home and make your own money and still be there to be a stay-at-home mom for your kids and have this, like, financial independence.
Again, the little seeds sound wonderful.
Provide for your family. Exactly, they do.
And that will be $12,000 initial buy-in, please and thank you.
And we got this shipment of moldy, smelly leggings, and you're going to have to sell them anyway.
And they all look like ugly roller rink flooring.
Tough titty.
Good luck.
Yeah. Roller rink flooring. Okay. Oh, one more thing. So Asahara would also get these women to stand around and advertise the cult. So now these lonely people who are so burdened with work and just looking for some relief would also be like, oh, pretty lady says she'll have sex with me if I join this weird church. I'm in.
Oh.
Yeah. Literally.
I mean... Sometimes coochie is your little seed.
Exactly. Exactly.
You gotta reap where you can sow, I guess.
It takes all kinds. It really takes all kinds.
Peace, happiness, a little snooch.
Yeah. Okay. I'm still not done just describing the cult to y'all. When you join Om Shinrikyo, you have to pay. Japan was experiencing an economic boom at this time. Like, think about the Japanese brands that were popular worldwide during the late 80s to mid-90s. Like, Yamaha, Toyota, Sony, Atari, Nintendo, VCRs, appliances, like...
Daewoo.
A lot. So a lot of these upper-crust folks, scientists, etc., weren't exactly hurting for money. I don't remember, like, the numbers exactly, but there was a cost associated with, like, each level of membership. So if you're just an entry-level guy, you maybe had to pay, like, $600 to join, right? And then from there, you enter the scheme of various other trainings and treatments and paths to enlightenment. Asahara's whole deal was that he wanted these people to turn into him. Like, literally make them more and more like him until he just had an army of him.
Oh.
I know you guys can't see it, but Katie's eyes are so big right now.
I'm just thinking, like, how this is very common in all the cults, and they all end up with the same haircut.
Mm-hmm.
I know that's the hairstylist thing to focus on, but this guy's hair was not cute.
No. No, it's very much like a greasy, long mop of hair.
He looks like he would smell weird.
Mm-hmm. 100%. Because his blood is different, Katie. So from there, you would pay increasingly higher amounts to move up the ranks, including things like receiving a pint of Asahara's bath water.
No!
Or to receive a few spoonfuls of what they claimed was his blood. And to eventually, possibly, meet him.
What the fuck?
It got insane.
What are they doing with his bath water?
It doesn't specify.
Did they drink it?
I don't know.
Did they bathe in it?
I'm sure some of them did.
Ew. Like, I made the joke of drinking
bath water? They thought he was... the Christ reborn and also the most recent Buddha.
I don't care
Buddha.
Who you are. I'm not drinking your bathwater.
I agree. But I'm saying... some people probably did. Former cult members have also testified that they paid handsomely for rituals involving Asahara's hair and bathwater. Despite the group urging followers to reject materialism. They were like, anti-materialism, anti-capitalism, anti-America. They were like, fuck that. Like, it's all about inner peace and enlightenment, and, like, you don't need any of that shit.
Except for this lock of hair.
Except
that
I need you to give me $6,000 for this piece of hair. Exactly.
For this fucking nasty, stanky, swamp-ass bathwater.
For this little of blood. Yeah. Yeah. What we say is blood. There's no way they could have been taking that much blood from this man. I'm just saying.
I don't know. Have you met people that sell plasma?
I have, because I went to college.
Welcome to America, where instead of a cult, you sell your blood to pay for school.
You literally sell your body. It's just different than the way you typically think.
Yep.
One person described paying more than 6,115, it says euros, but it's $8,100 US dollars in 1988 for a blood initiation where he drank what was said to be the leader's blood.
Ew.
Now, in order to fully assimilate, as with almost every other cult out there,
can't hear anything but Rick and Morty right now.
Oh, sorry.
Sorry.
You know all me. I know is I'm Pickle Rick, and you son of a bitch, I'm in. That's all I know.
Okay, we need to get you to watch the Unity episode.
Okay.
Because you'll know why I'm laughing at just the simple word of assimilate.
Assimilate. So, again, much like every other cult we've studied, you would have to give up all your worldly possessions and either sign over or sell off all your other assets. Yeah. Give us all your shit. Because materialism is bad, okay?
You don't need those things. Own nothing and be happy.
Yeah, can you wrap that lamp up for me? I want that. You would don the same off-white rags as everyone else in the cult, cut all ties with your friends and family, and become a fully-fledged member of Aum Shinrikyo.
And get this ugly fucking haircut.
Yep. We've talked about this in past episodes too, but the main reason behind this is to completely control each member's worldview. If you don't have any friends or family outside the cult, your entire world is just what Asahara and his members tell you it is. Remember lockdown? Remember being in your house 24/7? Now imagine no social media either, and some creepy smelly dude telling you that he's Christ.
Sounds like an abusive relationship.
Mm-hmm. You have difficulty seeing other points of view because it's a forced tunnel vision. And the other thing is, most of these members, the whole family joined. Family's very important. Mm. The spouse, the kids, everyone. It was really rare that somebody who already had a family would join solo. If somebody did go it alone, it was mostly young folks fresh out of school. And now, I have to talk about the anime.
What? Okay, I'm sorry, I'm loud. Okay. The anime.
There is an Aum Shinrikyo anime.
Because of course there is.
Because of course there is.
How else can we capitalize on this?
Now, they made other videos too, and some of them were like people in white with lots of flowers walking around and being like,
"Oh, this is like a tampon commercial.
Is the best." Yeah, or a razor commercial, right? They were like, Asahara is the best, Shinrikyo is the truth and the supreme, blah, blah, blah. And sometimes they would wear these, like, big-ass plaster heads that looked like him.
What the fuck?
Like, they would wear them on their head, except they were gigantic, like, chibi style, right? Like, huge head, little body. Yeah, like a mascot, exactly. And there'd be, like, four or five of them on stage. I'm sorry, I think I hit my mic, like, twice in the last 5 minutes. But the anime.
Hang on, I'm not past the plaster.
No, I have to back up too. There were also videos, and they would sometimes get these people on a lot of acid. We're going to talk about that too.
Because you can't have a cult without acid.
No, apparently you can't. and, like, put them in a dark room and show these videos, and then have some guy, like, run and be like, I'm the devil, and, like, scare the piss out of these people and be like,
you're shit myself. Right?
Now imagine you're, like, on acid, too, like, and you're in a dark room and you're watching this video and then there's, like, flashing lights and some crazy asshole running at you calling himself the devil. Like,
I would shit myself.
I'm not well. I need a moment.
Like, first of all, let me clarify. I will never be brave enough unless I'm on my deathbed to do a hallucinogen. But if I did, I'm gonna watch fucking Adventure Time or something.
Right? Something safe.
I mean, but also, you're so brainwashed at this point that you're just gonna do the thing.
Well, and you don't necessarily know that you're on acid. Somebody hands you this thing and says, hey, drink this, eat this, you know, whatever.
Mm. Mm. I don't want to eat anything that someone hands me because I don't know how you clean your kitchen.
Mm. So this anime.
Oh, Lord.
It depicts Asahara as this very Christ-like figure. He even appears to be more white than Japanese in the anime. He's got long, like, kind of brownish hair instead of his actual black hair.
Okay.
And, you know, he dresses in the long white robes, kind of. Okay. And he's just very smiley and benevolent. And there's, like, you know, different stories about how Aum Shinrikyo came to be and why you should join and why materialism is bad. And, like, it's a full-blown fucking anime. You can look it up on YouTube. You can watch clips of it. It's on YouTube. Like, look up Aum Shinrikyo anime or Shoko Asahara anime. Like, there's a fucking anime for this cult.
I don't want to do that. But am I going to?
I'm just saying. Probably. It's out there. It exists.
Did you watch it?
I watched a little bit of it.
Is it terrible?
It kind of feels like being on acid. And I've never been on any kind of drugs.
Says Dusty, who's never even, like, held a cigarette in her hand.
Nope. Yeah, the closest I have is, like, when I had my concussion and they gave me some muscle relaxers.
I feel great.
Yeah, and I just slept a lot and laughed about silly things. Yeah. Or, like, Laffy Gas. I've had that.
I mean, you're real fun before you fall asleep when you take NyQuil.
Yeah. Yeah.
It lasts for about 45 seconds.
Yeah, it really is. It's very short-lived. Okay. So, moving on from that.
All right.
I know. And we're not even to, like, what they did yet. Mm. So, as we discussed before, Asahara was not exactly the benevolent leader that he claimed to be. If members defied him, didn't live up to his expectations, or attempted to escape, he would have them punished severely. Now, if you think back to the stick beatings, these people believed that they were helping people by beating them, that they were releasing their karma. Asahara would tell them that they would garner good karma by helping their fellow cultist to release their bad karma. There were several forms of this punishment employed, and some of them actually weren't even really considered punishment. They were just, like, part of the standard fare for an Aum Shinrikyo member. So for one thing, they made these, like, electrode caps.
Okay.
So, like, a stupid little cloth hat.
I saw one of these when, like, I googled pictures of him.
You can Google pictures of this. With electrodes sewn into it, and you strap it on your head, and it fucking electrocutes you.
I was gonna say, you probably get it wet first.
Every so often. It would send 60 volts of electricity to your head, your brain. The followers...
I don't know why people think electrocuting someone's a good fucking idea.
Dude, how many more times do we have to say stop fucking electrocuting people as a form of quote-unquote therapy?
Or anesthesia.
Yeah. Yeah.
Hate it. Okay.
The followers were told that this shock would help to sync up their brain waves with Asahara's. She was doing pretty good, but she finally lost it.
You're just connecting to the Bluetooth hold still.
I gotta sync up with the leader.
I'm not laughing at people who died, am I?
No, I mean, no.
Okay.
Not yet.
Oh.
Nobody's died yet, just for the record. So they would receive the shock, sync up their brainwaves with Asahara's to become more peaceful and benevolent like the Supreme Leader, and eventually attain enlightenment.
Download his Fitbit data.
Yeah, yeah. Because apparently that's what these electrode caps would do. Apparently. Allegedly.
You just electronically vibe in, I guess.
So, I touched on this briefly, but I'm gonna go back to it now. A fucking lot of LSD. Like, a lot of LSD. Oh. Like, so much LSD.
Well, I mean, yeah.
So I told you earlier that Asahara got all these scientists to join his cult, right?
Was he electrocuting these people while they were on LSD?
No. The people getting electrocuted were probably more in the lower ranks, and then the people doing the scientific experiments would be up in the higher ranks. That doesn't mean they weren't wearing those electrode caps, but they probably weren't wearing them, like, while conducting experiments. I assume. So Asahara really liked acid. He really liked it. He was also quickly becoming a really powerful figure in Japan. So because he had all these scientists, and because he was becoming very powerful and wealthy, he could have his chemists literally just make him some acid, and he could also buy more if he needed it, or buy more supplies to make more. So Asahara and his followers were pretty much tripping balls
at all times. I was gonna say, he's just 24 hours a day tripping dick.
Yeah. Which I can't even imagine trying to just, like, go about any sort of activity on a daily basis like that.
Okay, and from my understanding of acid, like, if you take just a little bit, like, microdosing,
mm-hmm.
colors are more vibrant, you feel lighter, you feel happier.
Like, it's been said, it can be like, therapeutic treatment. It can also, like, trigger more creative thought and, like, you know, inspire you. And people will say they have, like, religious experience with it sometimes. Like, I've heard all of that.
But double that, and you get to watch people's faces melt into snakes and shit.
Yeah, or...
So how much was he taking?
You never really know, I think, as far as I've heard, if you're gonna have a good trip or a bad trip until it's already happening.
And I think that's when you take enough to, like, snake face melt.
Okay.
I think. Like, if you just microdose, I think it's you're just gonna feel enhanced. Yeah.
So, like, just imagine an entire community of people trying to function as a unit, all with just a fucking head full of acid.
Like, their face snake melting. Yeah,
just envision this for a moment. People trying to carry out tasks in large numbers.
Sounds like it would be an interesting sitcom, okay?
Yes. So other forms of torture, as we've said, included beating people with sticks, and the electrode caps giving you a shock every few minutes, 60 volts. But don't worry, the kids' electrode caps only gave 6 volts.
Oh.
Yeah.
That's like licking a battery, right?
Yeah.
Because that's, well, those are usually 12 volt.
Yeah, that's true.
So it's like half of licking a battery.
Another form of torture was to dunk the person's head in freezing water repeatedly while they hung upside down.
Nope.
Again,
I don't fuck around with water.
The jolt of freezing cold to their head was supposed to help them assimilate, to get on the path, and to become more like Asahara. Now this one, they goofed. A man died. He contracted hypothermia from the freezing water directly to his goddamn brain and died. And they were kind of like, oops, because they didn't mean for that to happen.
Shit, 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 shit.
And this was their...
They're all probably fucking face-melting snake
trip-dickin'.
Right. I'm leaving it.
Trip-dickin', yeah, exactly. And, like, this was the first death. Like, they hadn't been trying to kill anybody up to this point.
Could you imagine killing someone tripping balls on acid? On accident?
And, like, you're dunking them in water to try and get them to assimilate, and then all of a sudden, like, he not moving no more. And so they're all like, shit, 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 shit. We killed a guy. What do we do with the body? Mm. How do we manage this? What do we do? Like, and they're fucking high as shit. just trying to, like, oh, fuck, what do we do? You know what I mean? Like,
I keep trying to pick this dead body up and he's melting. I can't.
It's not funny, but yeah. Yeah.
I just assume everything melts when you take acid. I don't take hallucinogens, so I don't really know.
Yeah, hashtag we don't take hallucinogens. You can take hallucinogens if you want.
Send us a listener tale.
Send us a listener tale, yeah.
Oh my gosh. Send me all of your spoopy, like, mushroom acid stories. I want to hear them.
Even if they terrify us, we'll read them on the podcast.
I want to hear all of your fucking paranormal mushroom stories, please.
Now, when the members weren't being straight up beaten to death, electrocuted, or plunged into an icy cold brain coma, they weren't exactly living it up.
You don't say.
This is not the high life, except it also was, because LSD. The living quarters for the group's members were extremely cramped, even more so than a regular Tokyo apartment. So can you imagine you've got your apartment, like, just the way you want it, and you're like, yes, my own inner world, I'm gonna come home and, like, build a miniature figure and paint it while watching anime and listening to my favorite music and, like, journaling or whatever you do that makes you happy, right? Word. In your precious few hours that you're not at work.
And you're not shoulder to shoulder with another human being that's breathing on you.
Uh-huh. And then you're like, I'm gonna join Om Shinrikyo. And then you're in this fucking... Okay, they
Surprise,
were like...
Surprise, motherfucker, you live in a toaster oven now.
Yeah, they were like boxes. Sort of like a honeycomb in some definitions that I saw.
Oh.
And they were barely big enough to lie down in. And I'm uncomfortable just saying that because your girl is claustrophobic.
It's a tomb. Yeah, don't ever back Dusty into a corner. You're gonna get puked on.
I will throw up on you, yeah. And they would also stack these to save room. So then you have people on top of people on top of people again.
You know what this sounds like? A fucking morgue.
Yeah.
Where they pull the bodies out of the wall mm-hmm. in the, like, refrigerator drawers.
I was also thinking it sounded like the Hotel Cecil. The Cecil Hotel. Mm-hmm. People on top of people on top of people. Mm-hmm. And the members were only allowed to sleep for a few hours each night.
So you're sleep deprived and tripping dick.
Yep. And it gets better.
Oh.
So they're overall tired and more pliable, because when you're tired, your mental faculties are lower. You're more suggestible, you know?
Ask me in a little while.
Yeah. On top of being isolated from everyone outside the cult, and the physical pain being inflicted daily on you, and the drugs, now you're also functioning on barely any sleep. And this kind of sleep deprivation, as I just said, is another tactic used to get people to do whatever you want. It's what we saw in the standoff at Waco, Texas, too.
Well, and there's also, I learned from this person that I follow on Instagram that mm-hmm. fell into a yoga meditation cult.
Ooh.
Some of the breathing techniques they use often, like, oxygen deprive your brain to the point where you are no longer a completely functional, fully, like, your capacity is diminished because of how they have you breathe. When you sit for fucking weeks.
That is crazy.
Yeah. They had this, like, retreat that they were going to, and they would sit at the retreat and meditate for... And there was, like, days where you couldn't speak to anyone. And all you did was sit and meditate, and apparently fart. Like, they often commented about how people were farting a lot.
And I mean, I'm just gonna say this. When you up your veggie intake... You be farting a lot.
Well, and they fed him, like, an all-vegan, high-fiber diet, so...
Mm-hmm. Yep. Fart a hole in the sky.
And you can't laugh, you can't say nothing, you're not speaking to no one, you are sitting there.
Also, like, my back cramps real bad when I'm trying to meditate, so, like, for weeks?
Yeah.
Nah, fam. Like, no, I could not.
Yeah. And that's, like, one of the things that the people who do these retreats, like, will post on their Instagram in their, like, bio of how many hours they've sat.
Dude, like, that fucking Britney chick. Oh, what the fuck was her name? I was just talking about it a few episodes ago. She had those types of retreats too, like religious retreats. So
I this the one that the tanning lady?
It was the lady that also got all of those dogs and then abused them.
Yep. It's the same person.
Like, I feel like we have to cover this.
it's a necessity at this point.
Okay.
But, yeah, the way they make you breathe at these retreats, when you sit for a fucking week and a half, 2 weeks.
Oh my God.
And that's, like, your badge of honor that you've,
like,
done it for that
long.
Do you
get up to piss?
I don't think so.
Or do you just, like, diaper, or...
No, I think you just don't. You like, just, you are...
Oh, my God.
You are...
But they're eating.
Yeah. Like, at the end of the night, you go to bed. Oh. So I'm assuming you get to, like, poop at the end of the night or whatever. But, like, you sit and you do these, like, shallow nose breaths that cut mm-hmm. your brain off from oxygen.
That's terrifying.
And then you are literally more susceptible to, like, reprogramming, essentially. Yeah. Because that part of your brain is, like, your logic centers are shut down.
Mm-hmm. Somebody's gonna say, it's gonna be like the, using the fucking force. You fell down some stairs. I fell down some stairs. Yeah. Like, okay. Getting back to this cult.
Yes.
Additionally, the alm food, as it was called, was seriously abysmal. Members were allowed a single meal a day, and it consisted only of a small serving of boiled vegetables.
The farts.
Alm food.
Farts.
So go ahead and add starving and malnourished to the list of things that were going on with these folks.
Okay. I could be around for a lot of things, but if you fuck with my food, I'm going home.
Seriously. Like, Katie already knows. A good or bad meal can make or ruin my entire fucking day.
Like, one time, I watched Dusty heat up this, it was like a veggie steamer rice tray thing. It had too many red bell peppers in it. And I have never seen her so upset about food.
Like,
I was like, shut the fuck up, we'll go get Chipotle, you're gonna be okay.
It is a real fucking problem.
Okay, but then I realized, when I was trying to, like, calorie deficit myself, I already spent those calories. It's already in my app. I'm gonna eat it, but I'm gonna be fucking mad at it. That's a waste. That was expensive calorie-wise, and it was a waste.
Or, yeah, it wasn't good.
Yeah.
And, you know, yeah.
You can't uneat it.
I follow a couple people right now who are doing bodybuilding prep, and so they're like, oh, I'm down to, like, such and such carbs a day because we're in a cut and we're, like, 12 weeks out or whatever, and I'm like, yeah, fuck that. I would be such a bitch, you guys. And I can't be mean to the kids. Like, I can't be hangry and, like, take it out on the children. So, I'ma just eat the carbs and be happy and nice to people.
Okay, I've literally been adjusting my daughter's lunch so that hopefully she's not as moody to her poor teacher. I've been like, man, you're growing or something because these little hormones got you mean. And I say that with all the love in the world. She's just a sassy child.
Well, and it's that time of the year. I literally spoke with another teacher friend earlier today. And she was saying that her daughter, who is in kindergarten right now, heading into first grade, yep. is, like, having big feelings. So I had a sub yesterday. I went on a field trip, which was awesome. I took my fourth graders to the Musical Instrument Museum. It's my favorite place in the world. We had a great time. But there had to be a sub there to teach all my other classes because I was gone with fourth grade. And, you know, I spoke with the lady briefly. I walked her through what my sub plans were. She seemed good to go. I come back. She gives me a good report. All good, right? So I guess today that same sub was then in the kindergarten classroom of the kindergartners who had music yesterday. So now these kids had her yesterday as their music sub, and now they have her all day today as their regular
You're
sub.
You're familiar now. You don't just smell like fear.
My friend's daughter, my coworker's daughter, was, like, bawling. She's so mean. I don't want to be with her all day. Oh. And, like...
See, this is where I'm a sucker, and I'm like, I have to communicate because then I'm just gonna fucking burn relationships to the ground. Right. And I'm like, and my kid said she doesn't want to be around you, so no.
Right, and my coworker is also a teacher, so she's like, well, maybe, you know, yesterday she was having a bad day, and that's why she was feeling kind of mean. Maybe some of the other kids were mean to her, and, like, you only saw her for 45 minutes yesterday for music class, but today it's all day, so, like, you can make sure she has a better day. And, you know, trying to kind of talk her through it, just calm her down, like, it will be okay.
Important.
And, you know, I didn't really get an update because it was a Friday and we all kind of left at the end of the day, but I hope that she had a better day in her classroom.
Telling you.
It's tough, man.
These kids be growing.
It's a lot.
These growing hormones got them fucked up.
And your teeth just be falling out all the goddamn time.
Dude, we're four teeth down. I feel that shit in my soul. And I'm like, you know, this was cool when I was a kid, but looking at it, like, as an adult
As
now,
an adult, it's fucking weird, man.
Well, and I'm like, hold still, I'm gonna pull let me pull your tooth out of your head.
Kids come up to me and they're, like, yanking on it. They're like, I got a wiggly tooth. I'm like, that's great. Leave it the fuck alone and go sit down.
Except they're, like, talking and it's, like, flopping on a bloody string in their mouth. So you kind of have to be like, can you pull that shit out? Because that's gross.
Yeah. Or, like, today I had this poor little guy. Oh, he was so upset. He's, like, really rough and tumble kind of kid, like dirt and mud and sports and running and climbing trees and like all of the things.
Probably got a name like Duke.
I would tell you his name, but I can't. That's okay. But it is okay. Very much a name like that. And he's got his finger all bandaged up, his pinky, right?
Uh-huh.
And I'm like, yeah, whatever, this kid plays hockey and softball and, you know, other, like,
probably jammed it or
something happened, right? And we're going along, we're doing drums and making a little story with our drum noises. And all of a sudden he sits down and he's like got his head in his hands and he's just crying. And I'm like, buddy, what's wrong? And he's like, my pinky nail fell off.
What the fuck?
And we just glued it back on. Just
I can't. Poor baby.
And I'm like, what do you mean it fell off? Because he's still got the bandage on his finger. And he's like, I felt it just, like, pop back off. It's like, and he's like, it's in the bandage, but it's, like, not attached.
Your Uber's here. Go to the nurse.
And so that's basically what I said. I said, do you want to go to the nurse or do you want to wait until you go home? Because I have kindergarten, like, at the end of the day. So I was like, it's an hour or less before you go home. Like, do you want to just go home and let mom help you with it, or do you want to go to the nurse? And he's like, I want to go to the nurse. And I was like, okay, buddy. And he comes back in, like, 5 minutes with an ice pack, which I was like, that's not going to help. But I felt so bad for him, because you could tell he was like, damn it, we just glued this fucker back on.
I just shoved that tooth back in the socket. I don't know why it didn't stay.
Oh, man.
Poor baby.
Yeah, so hopefully they got that all sorted out for him.
All the big feelings.
Yeah. Okay, getting back to this cult. I'm almost done. We're going to wrap up part one here, and then in part two, we'll get into actual activities of Aum Shinrikyo. And
besides doing massive amounts of
besides
acid.
Besides doing a lot of acid. So basically, the whole cult, we haven't even really gotten into the master plan or general activities, like I said. Which, besides making a fuck ton of LSD and making loads of money selling it, they were engaged in other criminal activities, too. There's speculation that they were involved with both the police and the Yakuza, either by having members in those organizations, or having strong connections, or having, like, serious dirt on someone higher up in their system. In
is
the
that
case.
Like the mafia?
Yeah. Okay, yeah, the Yakuza is literally the Japanese mob, and they are, same thing as this, like, highly organized, they're fucking everywhere, they're terrifying, like, do not fuck with them. Yeah.
But you buy into these things for security.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm like, you're a big cult who's involved in making LSD, which presumably the Yakuza would be involved with, too.
Everybody's got an upline, I'm just saying.
Yeah, now you got ties with them, too. And then, like I said, there's speculation that they were also involved with people in law enforcement. So people who were not living with the cult, but who were associated with the cult in the police and, you know, other law enforcement office.
Greasy.
Mm-hmm.
Greasy.
On top of that, Asahara also wanted his followers to manufacture and build him guns and ammunition from scratch. Specifically, he wanted 1,000 AK-47s built from scratch and at least 1 million rounds to put through them.
How do you gun from scratch?
You really don't, because you need, like, some sort of factory machinery to make these parts, like molds and, like,
you're talking about printer.
Teeny tiny parts that need to fit together, like,
well, need to fit together very precisely.
Exactly. And, like, couldn't y'all just buy, like, one fucking mold from Russia? You know what I mean?
Word.
But no. Asahara wanted it all from scratch. He wanted them to physically make each piece and assemble them all there at the complex. And we get into, like, this a little bit later.
How from scratch? Like, mining the metal and shit?
I think so. Like, literally melting it down and creating the parts. Like, head full of acid.
Okay.
Yeah.
Could you imagine building AK-47s
with a head full of acid?
Okay, but being tell like, me why that's oh my assembling God. The birds.
Well, and they also had this concept, too. So they would do these things called prostrations, right? Where you literally, like, throw yourself down at the ground, sort of like in a worship pose, and then straighten all the way back up. So kind of like a burpee.
I was like
up, down.
Is that a burpee?
Like, and he would say, like, you need to perform 1,000 of these every morning and every
CrossFit
night.
CrossFit was a cult.
Or
I
something like that. Yeah, CrossFit is a cult. I love CrossFit, though. And so the followers already had this idea in their mind of like, well, if I'm to perform 1,000 prostrations per day, like, that's an impossible task. But the leader is asking me this impossible task because that's the only way that I'll become enlightened. Or, like, you know, I have to pursue.
This dude, and he's not doing 1,000 burpees a day.
No, he is not.
He's round and happy.
And he ain't eating that fucking boiled vegetable alm food either. He was having, like, wine and, like, pork and shit.
And probably bathing in LSD.
Yeah.
Maybe that's why he was selling his bathwater. It was just fucking sweated out LSD.
Yeah, somebody's just following him around, and, like, every once in a while they just, like, squeegee some off of him and take.
Okay,
so
smells like swampy asshole to me. Ugh.
So the whole idea of, like, I want you to assemble this from scratch, and I want 1,000 of them, and I want 1,000,000 rounds, that just poured into the whole, well, this is an impossible task. And, like, the leader asked me this impossible task because it's part of my journey towards enlightenment.
I need to do it to please him.
And, like, should I die in the pursuit of this, it will have been worth it because I'm pursuing this task for the good of the cult and enlightenment and so on.
And acid.
Okay.
Okay.
So I'm going to briefly touch on the philosophy of the group, and then I'm going to stop, and we'll talk about all the other shit next time.
You're so kind telling them where you're going to stop.
I know. Also because I feel like it's getting late.
I am tired.
We are right there, folks. So getting back to the philosophy of the group. Many cults operate on a doomsday mentality. Either the end of the world is coming, and we're going to be the only ones left alive.
Or, like, this comet's gonna come pick you up and you better not miss it.
Right. So, like Manson or, like, Heaven's Gate. Like, yeah, the end of the world is coming, we need to get the fuck out now. Like, Heaven's Gate, or, you know, there's gonna be a massive race war and we're gonna be the only ones left alive, like with Manson.
Beat me up, Scotty.
With Aum Shinrikyo, it's a little bit different. Now remember, Asahara has told everyone that he's not only the most recent Buddha, but that he's also the second coming of Christ. He is inherently better than everyone else. He is enlightened. He can levitate. And yeah, he's basically just the best, according to him.
He can levitate. Did he do that in front of people?
As far as I know, it was just the photo. And they would put this in, like, magazines or, like, the backs of comic books, right? Because they're trying to get, like, kind of nerdy people to join, right?
Because they're smart.
They're smart, and they're already sort of closed off from society. They're not interested in
easier
being popular, easier to isolate. They're already looking for an escape, something different.
May or may not have already been victimized, so they're probably easier to re-victimize.
Mm-hmm.
Gross.
All of that. Now, also remember, I just feel the need to remind you of all these things, that Asahara has twisted the idea of karma within his group members' minds. So they believe that they can achieve or gain good karma by quote-unquote helping others to release their bad karma, aka beating or killing them. Now for doomsday. The end of the world is coming. Armageddon, as Asahara called it. This wasn't necessarily something that was just going to happen to him. No, instead, the end of days would be brought about by Aum Shinrikyo itself. Huh? Asahara and his followers would massacre all of Tokyo and eventually the world, and would remain as the only humans standing to begin the world anew in the aftermath of their own apocalyptic holocaust.
Why would you want that? That means that you gotta, like, fuck people you're related to. Why? That's a small gene pool.
Yep.
Don't keep it pure.
We were just talking about, so we've been watching the Blade movies over again.
Word.
Which, like, they hold up, I'm just saying.
Word. Well aged.
And, like, one of the plot points is that, like, they want to kill all humans, right?
Mm-hmm.
And we were like, so if you're a vampire who needs to survive off of human blood, and you kill all humans, what the fuck y'all gonna eat?
the color red like Marceline.
I guess. So they wanted to kill the whole world. Asahara... Oh, I already said that part. Sorry. Okay. So that's where we're going to stop for now. And then I'm exactly halfway through my notes right now, so expect part two to be approximately this long. We will get into a lawsuit that they dealt with, various assassination attempts, and the ultimate culminating activity of Aum Shinrikyo, the Tokyo subway attack.
Oh. Don't like that.
Nope.
Don't like that.
So thank you, as always, for listening and sticking with us. I know we have been inconsistent. We've not been around, but I promise you we're working on it. And we love you, and we really appreciate all your support. And we're trying to get merch out to you soon. And send us a listener tale. And
send me your spooky mushroom stories. If you've done LSD, I want to hear about it. Tell me about you. Don't tell me if you've taken ayahuasca, because that makes you throw up, and y'all know I don't do that. But, like, maybe tell me about the hallucinating part, because it's interesting.
We don't talk about vomit.
No. We don't talk about puking.
And send us case suggestions, too, if there's an episode or a, you know, case that you want us to cover, something you want us to talk about, send it to theeldritchestate@gmail.com.
Do it.
All right, that's it for now, guys. Remember, you can check out anytime you like.
But you can never leave.
Bye.
Toodaloo.